I'm going to start the interview. It's an interview conducted on Monday the 13th of February 2012 with Wynne Farmer at her home at 2154 Camden Valley Way, Edmondson Park. The interview is part of Memory Bank and the project is Pioneers of the Fringe Project. The interviewer is Sue Bowden. And the first thing that I'm going to ask Wynne is, couldn't she tell me her full name, and her date of birth and her place of birth?
It's Winifred Agnes Farmer, Sydenham Road, 211 Sydenham Road, Marrickville, where I was born. And my birth date of birth was the 14th of September, 1917.
And I'm also interested to know your mother's maiden name, her date of birth, and her place of birth.
Mum's name was Williams. She was born in 1880 in Stourport, England.
And what was her first name?
Eliza. She was Eliza Agnes.
Eliza Agnes
Williams.
Yes. So you were born at home in Marrickville.
I think so.
And you lived in Marrickville for how long?
Till I was about seven or eight. Then my dad bought a news agency at Strathfield and we moved out there. Then we moved from there to Fairfield West, and I went to Fairfield West School on the day it opened in 1924, and I was eight then. I stayed there until 1931 when I turned 14, and then we came up here.
And up here is
To the present address.
When you moved here in... Wasn't Camden Valley Way there?
No, it was. We had our road mailbox number one on Bringelly Road. It was Preston's, yes, it was Preston's.
Yes, Preston.
And it was called Preston's because across the road from where we lived, there was a very old house which used to be the post office owned by Mrs. Preston. And I suppose everybody, it was a Cub and Co road. It had just been macadamised when we came, and I think people used to say, oh, we're going to Preston's, meet Mrs. Preston's, and that they called the whole place Preston's. Then we had a market garden here because I couldn't get a job, because you couldn't get a job if you hadn't got experience, and if you hadn't got experience, you couldn't get a job. And we grew tomatoes, and Dad had... glass houses. We used to grow early tomatoes. And then somebody told him about building a golf course. So he must have thought I was a boy because I had to help him pull the trees out, knock the trees down and pull them up. And wait on. Then...
Okay, we're starting again. We're starting from, we're going to go backwards a bit with Wynne now because her father had lived in Marrickville where he was working with metal. He had a, tell us about that when you were very young.
Well, my dad had a factory there that he used to do work for architects, and he could do almost anything out of copper. But then he hurt his back and he couldn't do the job anymore. That's why we had to leave there. Then he went out and got a newsagent at Strathfield, and I don't really know why we left there, but we didn't stay long. Then he bought the ground and came out to Fairfield West. Bought some land up here. He bought about 1927, he bought the land up here. He was growing tomatoes, and he had glass houses, early tomatoes, and he had the idea of having a dairy, and we got the little calves at 2 days old and reared the little calves, and when they were old enough to calve, we put in for a license, a milk license, and they wouldn't give it to us, so we had to sell the calves. Then somebody talked him into having a golf course, and we went. When we came here, this was all bush, and we had 110 acres altogether. And where did we go from there?
So 110 acres in 19...
Well, we started off with 22 acres, and then we had another 22 onto that. And then we added a bit from the back onto that. And then we had another 22 here. He kept buying bits of ground. And every bit of ground added up and came to 110 acres altogether.
And we have some of the early rate notices. So I'm going to scan those in later for okay. for the lots here. But you had when you were living with the and growing the tomatoes and having the calves, were you selling the tomatoes to
yes,
the community?
We used to sell some of the tomatoes. Some people across the road used to go to the market with their things. They used to take our tomatoes and things in and sell. We also had a stall on the side of the road, so we used to sell them there as well. And we were doing that until the war came. I'm hopping.
The Second World War.
Yes. Wait a minute, I've hopped around a bit, haven't I? Somebody gave him the idea of having the golf course. And we had cows on the ground at the time. And the people who put the architect who worked out the golf course, he'd put pieces of paper around the different trees where the greens and the trees would be. The cows came along and ate the paper. But anyway, Dad would help it. We had a tree puller, and I used to help Dad pull the trees out because I really think he thought I was a boy. And then we were doing that until the... Oh, no, we opened the golf course. I can't remember what time, but it was just before the war. Then we had to close the golf course because there was no petrol, and we had to close it. And in the meantime, we'd got the trees that Dad had chopped down for the fairways. He built a kiln, and he used to put those in and burn those for charcoal. Mum and I used to break the charcoal up and put it in bags and sell it to people who had charcoal burners on the back of their cars. And then at that time, Anthony Hordens used to have a depot in Scottreath at Liverpool. And we went into Sydney and bought the things, and then they would deliver them out to Scottreath, and another fellow would bring them out to the houses. And he could see that I needed a job. Actually, I tried to join up in a land army or something at the beginning of the war, and they wouldn't take me because they said I was in a protected industry anyway, seeing as a market garden. So that was the end of that one. Then he suggested that I go and get a job. Cable makers had just opened. So I went down there and got a job.
And cable makers were Meadow, where were they located?
They were on Moorbank.
Moorbank, that's right.
That's right, they're still there.
Yes.
But they've changed their names now. Just BICC then. And I stayed there until 1966. Don't know how old I was. And then I had to leave because Dad was sick, so I had to leave work. In the meantime, my mum got a job, put her age down, and got a job at the munitions factory or something at Villawood. Where
so
did I go?
How did you get from here?
Oh, yeah. Now
your job.
Ingleburn Camp, the soldiers used to go back on leave, and they had to get back by 6 o'clock or something at Ingleburn. So I used to walk up to Crossroads with a lot of other people at the same time, and we used to catch the bus, the Ingleburn League Army bus, that was going back to Liverpool to pick up the next lot of soldiers, and we used to get that in. And when we'd get down there, there were so many soldiers trying to get on the bus as we were trying to get out, so the soldiers were pushing us back in again. And then, of course, I used to just walk over the bridge to cable makers.
And what did you work a shift, or was it what sort
I
of
started
hours
as
did
a shift.
Work?
Started as a shift, 6 o'clock till 2 o'clock, I think. And then I had to go from 2 o'clock till 11. And my dad used to walk up to Crossroads to meet me. But because it wasn't any good to him having to, you know, that. So I asked, could I get day work? And they gave me day work. So I was day work from then on.
And what are your memories of working there? Were there good resources for the workers? Was it?
It was cable makers, as far as I was concerned, they were wonderful in those days. They really were. I started off by braiding cable, putting braid around it. It used to go to the Air Force and Navy and things like that. And then later on, I ended up in the Stormen and Packers, and I ended up in the office. And then that's when I left. But now, cable makers was good. The only thing that was cable makers, you didn't have to talk about anybody, because everybody was related to everybody else. And you had to make sure you didn't say something about somebody that you shouldn't have said. But
did you make friends at cable makers that you still see?
Well, I did make friends. I had two girlfriends that I used to go out every Saturday. We used to go into town and see the... this was after the war, of course. We used to go out and go to the theatre and that sort of thing. But my dad wasn't... He didn't like people. So I never invited anybody home. So it was always people outside. Mm. And
And so when you were at cable makers and were men and women working there at the same time. And there were facilities like staff rooms, and the conditions were, it was...
Didn't have only canteen, we didn't have a staff room.
And you'd have your lunch there, and yeah. Or did you take your lunch?
Or you take your lunch, and you used to have morning tea. And I worked with men most of the time because Stormen and Packers, not only the girls who put the cable on the reels and that sort of thing, but there were the men who did the bigger things and packed things. So, and but cable makers was good.
You were there for a long time, and you worked on the floor, but then you worked
into the office.
And how many people worked at cable makers at that time, do you think? It was a big...
No idea.
Big business.
It was. Mm. Yeah, and after that they took on Estefoam and all other sort of things. And I was there when the big flood was in about 1950, 56, I think, and the river came up and the water went right into the loading dock. And it washed all the things out of the canteen. They had to get the men back in the middle of the night to put sandbags around the boilers in case they went. And we were... The water was so high, the old wooden bridge was there then, and it started to move. And they sent us all home in case we got stranded on the other side of the river.
So you got in all right, but we then got in a all chance right, you but mightn't get home.
And that bridge, I tell you...
And so did you have to have a few days off while the water subsided?
I can't remember. Mm. Mm. But that bridge was the old wooden bridge. It was funny. There used to be an old chappie with a horse and cart, and it was one way only on that bridge because it was made for horses and carts. The old chap who used to take his horse, and he'd have traffic held up and down one end while the horse was just going plod, plod, plod over the bridge. And one day a car caught fire on the bridge. The fire brigade were there putting foam all over the car, and the bridge was burning underneath. It was a funny old bridge, that was.
Gosh. What are other stories of working at cable makers that you can remember?
Well, we used to play... It was a real different type of thing altogether in those days. We used to play Vigro at lunchtime. Mm. And they had a horse there that used to do the ploughing, used to mow the grass, and they used to feed him meat pies, and he loved them. What else did I remember about Cable Mate?
Did they have any... you played Vigoro, but you know these days companies have sports teams. Did they have anything like that?
Some of them, they had a bowl, but some of them used to play bowls, but not during the war years. They were much after. A lot of things changed after the war years.
Did it get bigger after the war years?
Did it expand? They took on the foam, yes. The ester foam, but I don't think it, that's about all that I remember, was bigger. Because it was a good place to work, though they were good. You could talk to people, you could talk to the boss and all that sort of thing.
And the conditions were good, and if there was a problem you knew that they'd look after you.
Yeah, I started there at £2.18. Always looking forward to the time when I'd get a £5 in my wages. And when I left in 1966, I was getting $38 a week. Can you imagine $38? And I left just after decimal currency came in. $38.
So when
did you get £38?
It might have been. Oh no, 66. Decimal currency came in 1966.
Yeah, and I was still there when decimal currency came in.
So it was probably $38.
I think it was $38. I should have
your first pay certificate.
I should have that pay packet there somewhere.
Well, if you find that, we'd be interested in copying it.
I've got it somewhere.
And so that was that your last job?
My only job.
Your only
job? Well, not exactly only, because before I knew about cable makers, my aunt was living over at... Rockdale Way, and the American Army had a place there where they were doing the camouflage nets, and she got me a job there doing the camouflage nets, but I was only there for I stayed with her and I only did that for a few months because I got my job at Cable Makers. So I left.
Yeah. And what happened here back at Preston's when you were working? What happened to all the land and what happened?
Well, my dad was looking after the land and the cows, and because Mum was working, as I said, at the New Nations place, and I was down there. And
the golf course was running?
Wait a minute. I've missed a bit, haven't I? We started the golf course. It was just going. We just got it going, 9 holes, when the war started. And as soon as the war started, we couldn't get anybody coming, so we had to close it down and then opened it again after the war. We started off from scratch again after the war.
And you were still at Cable Makers, though, because
I was still at Cable Makers.
So he was running the golf course?
Yes, I think he got a couple of fellas to come and help to do some of the clearing and do some of the things. But we didn't have any money because it was just after the Depression. There was only myself and Mum that were bringing money in because we couldn't sell the tomatoes and that then because, well, we got past the tomato stage then.
And so when you were living here at that time, where did you do your shopping?
They used to deliver. Tebbs used to... No, what's his name over there? The bread used to come from what's over there? Milk was delivered.
Near Crossroads, do you mean?
Yes, I'm trying to think of what. Engelbert.
Yes.
Glenfield. Yes. The bread came from Glenfield. The meat came from Liverpool. The milk used to come from somewhere.
But it all came here.
It was all delivered. Trying to think what else. Oh, and the mail was always delivered.
So if you wanted flour or you wanted sugar, you know, the basics.
There was a little shop just up the corner there by the hall. Oh, and one other thing I was going to say about the bus, Georgie Neville's bus. If you wanted anything from Liverpool, people further out, they used to give him a note and he would take it into Liverpool, say to the butcher, or pick something up from the railway station for you. He would pick it up, and then you waited for him to come back, and he would bring it back for you, which was good because a lot of people couldn't get anywhere in those days. People didn't have cars. Some had a horse and cart, but that was a pretty slow job, and most of them didn't have that anyway. So Georgie Lovell used to not only pick up the mail, he'd pick up all the anything you wanted. Mm. He used to pick up the golf balls for us from the railway station, because we used to order them, and then they'd send them up on the train, and Georgie would go and pick them and bring them back.
Did you have a car?
Yes, we did have a car. We had a car called a Kleino, which nobody realises, and we didn't look after it. It would have been a fortune if we'd have looked after it. But Dad took the back off it and used it to pull the mowers round the golf course.
How do you spell that?
Clyno.
Okay.
I think it was made in France, or partly, but it had Morris parts and everything. If you want anything for it, you got the Morris parts.
And do you remember what time, when you bought that car?
1927.
Really?
And he paid £200 for it. And I had all its papers, and I sent them up to the War Museum at Canberra, because I thought they might be interested, and I never heard anything more about it, so I don't know what happened to it. Mm. But he paid £200 for it, which was a fortune in those days.
So I'm going to go back to your dad just for a little interlude.
I saw I've slipped backwards and forwards
a bit there. But
there's
a question I want you to tell me about. Well, we don't know his first name because I didn't ask you that. What was your father's?
Albert George Farmer.
So Albert George Farmer bought a 200-pound car. No, it couldn't be 200 pounds.
200. Yes, 200 pounds.
Okay, 200 pounds. That is a lot of money. And but you also, when he was living at Marrickville, he had a little workshop for the fabrication of metal works. And one of the projects commission that he worked on were the main doors for the Commonwealth Bank in Martin Place. When you were just a small child, that would have been. Do you remember that?
No. Because they reckon when I was walking up and down the doors, I must have been about two or something, or little.
Mm.
Now, that didn't... That, in a vague sort of way, but not really, because I was only seven when we left there.
Yes.
And
so he was...
I don't think I was very interested in it, actually. No. Little kids are not.
We have photos of those doors, which we'll scan in later. So he was an entrepreneurial sort of chap. Do you think that you're an entrepreneurial sort of person?
What's that?
It means you've got lots of good ideas and you have a go at anything.
Yeah.
And you aren't scared to take a risk. Do you think you're like that?
I reckon so. But my dad put his foot in. He went for things that really, like the cows, he didn't work out where he was going to get them. We hadn't got a bale. In those days, nobody cared. You just did them a bale with a dirt floor. He didn't work out what we were going to do with this milk when we'd got these cows milking. I was milking four cows night and morning at the time. And he never worked out what we were going to do.
So you didn't have a license, and
you were
up at milking time and then 3 o'clock again or whatever. So your day, how were your days before you went to Cable Makers? What sort of a day did you have?
Picking tomatoes.
So up at dawn.
Watering tomatoes. Anything that the boys should have been doing. All the girls did, though.
Yes.
I mean, round here, every girl worked on the farm. We had glasshouse tomatoes and early tomatoes and that. And as I said, everybody, you did all the things that all girls did at that time. Because that's all girls were useful for, was something like that.
And this is the house that was here, or tell me where you live.
There was a house next door.
So you lived in a house that was here, or did you have to build a house on?
My dad was a builder as well. He built this house. I mean, anything that had to be done, he'd have a go at it. So I had somewhere I would have had a photo of the house next door.
But and describe the house next door.
We moved over here.
Describe the house next door when you first moved in. Can you describe that?
Oh, I've got a photograph of it somewhere.
Was it timber or was
it fibro? No, it was fibro like this. Everything was fibro in those days. It was quite a nice house. It was brick verandas round.
And how many
And
rooms?
Also, while we were down at Fairfield West, Dad used to buy, he bought a big block of ground. He'd build a house, which wasn't his trade, or somebody showed him how to build a house. We lived in the garage and he'd build a house. Then when he sold that house, we'd move on to the next block and did the performance all over again. Another garage, another house. He built 7 houses down there before we came up here. And then he did that one. This was the clubhouse. It was, but that wall wasn't in. And we used to serve, it's a big room, we used to serve morning and afternoon teas and that sort of thing in here then.
So your house was next to the clubhouse?
Ours was next door.
So did they come into the clubhouse off the main road?
Yeah. And where was I going from there?
And then there must have come a time when the golf course was sold, or what happened to the golf course?
No, we closed it down when Dad couldn't do it anymore. We just closed it down. And then we had cows eating the grass down till Michael Sullivan, Leo Sullivan, who was the mayor of Liverpool, he and another man, he had a cement works, and he brought out some pavers for us here. And I just said to him, did he know anybody who wanted to buy a golf course? And he had, and another man named Jardine, I think, they were going to buy it. They decided they liked to do it if they could get the money to do it. Actually, when he did, Dad had died by then, and when he came and asked me if I wanted to sell the ground, well, I said yes, because I couldn't look after it. And then he didn't pay me off. He only paid me after he sold another property. But anyway, we had a bit of money then.
So you and your mother were there, here, living in this house by then?
Yeah.
And what time? When did your father die? Do you remember that?
The year after I left work. That's why I left work.
So 1967?
Must have been 1967. And he was 85. Because he was born in 1884. And he was born in Birmingham. My mum was born in Stourport. I don't know where that was, but it was somewhere over there. And they came out here. They came out to Australia. They were immigrants too, in 1914. Then they went back to England when Dad's father died. And then they came back again. So that's why they were in Marrickville in the 1918, I don't know when they went there, but he nearly brought a property in Queensland and everywhere. And Mum's sister came out and Dad's brother came out. They were out here. So that's now all I've got is cousins, because everybody else is back in England or disappeared altogether.
Because you were an only child.
I was an only child. And Mum's sister had no children. And Dad's brother had 3 children. That's my cousins now that I'm still, you know, friendly with. Mm. The only family I've got out here now. What have I left out?
And so what we have is the land shrinking, because you had 100 acres and then the...
Ingleburn Camp took some of the back.
Yes, that was a negotiation in the... No, I think I've got the documents for... the sale of the resumption of some land.
Yes, that was it. That was that.
And that was in. The date was 1941 for the resumption of the defence land.
I must tell you about 1941 too. 1941, my dad had acute appendicitis. And he was in Liverpool Hospital, which at that time was a one ward of what is now the Tech. That was the old men's home. And Dad was in one ward there. And seeing he was operated on, when most people who had appendicitis died in those days because they got peritonitis, Dad was lucky. He was in there in 1941, just as Singapore fell. So they sent all the ones who could manage were sent home because they were getting the hospital ready for all the casualties we were supposed to get when the Japanese landed in Australia. Mm. We were also told that when they got to Sydney, we were all to make our way up to the mountains. They never told us what we were going to do when we got to the mountains, but we were supposed to clear out and go to the mountains. Fortunately, we didn't have to get there. Mm. So that was 1941.
And how did your father get to the hospital?
No idea.
The doctor came and said acute appendicitis and you're out here at Preston's. And I wonder how he got from here to the hospital. An ambulance, do you think?
An ambulance?
That's right, a horse and cart.
Actually, Dr. Peary was the doctor here at that time. Should tell you about him. Because he would come out to anybody who was sick in his old car. And if he didn't think you could pay, he never charged you. No, Mike came out to my mum once and he never gave us a bill. He never charged anybody. I don't know how he got...
Did you give him some tomatoes instead?
I don't know. No.
He could have.
These days, if you were, like we had the milk, we'd give people milk which we didn't want. And we would get veggies and everybody. It was a different life altogether.
Tell us about your friends and neighbours.
And you never... Well, there weren't any close neighbours. Well, there was one across the road. Oh, and the people who originally owned our house was just up the back there. You left your door unlocked. Nobody locked a door. Nobody stole anything in those days. They were more likely to give you something than to want to take it. Mm. It was... I remember a little boy called Jimmy Lennon. He used to go around people's back, because there were lots of rabbits in those days. He'd go around and catch the rabbits and come round to the front of the house and sell you your own rabbit back. And there used to be an old chappy come round selling clothes props. And seeing it as war years, you used to have the swaggies coming round.
I was wondering about that.
Yes, they used to come in and if you'd got something. I mean, you really hadn't got much yourselves, but you usually found them. They'd bring a dirty old billy in and want you to make them a billy of tea, and you'd make the tea. And if you'd got some bread and cheese or something, you'd give them a sandwich. But they were always up and down the road.
And what did you do for entertainment? What did your parents do? Your father, you said, didn't like people so much.
No,
so did
didn't.
They go out to the local dances or to
dances?
The... Well, were there,
dances?
Well, was there a community hall that you used to get together?
He wouldn't let me go to the hall. But there was a dance hall just up the corner there. Well, we had the car and my uncle had a car too. That's my cousins. And we used to go down to Cronulla nearly every Sunday. All the kids, you know, we were only young. We were 14, 15, 16 and that. My cousins were younger. We used to go down there until the war and we hadn't got the petrol. Then that finished. And you used to have a little radio in those days. The radio used to have a battery. And every time you wanted it particularly, the battery would go flat. I remember listening to them for the evacuation from Dunkirk. I can still remember listening to that on the little radio, because that was a big thing in those days. It was, you know, it was really, really something.
But well, the fear and the anticipation of an attack from the Japanese was something that was also very significant in your life.
That's when we were supposed to run up to the mountains.
That's right. So you're in a sense, did you feel quite isolated out here, or were you still part of the Sydney? You know, the plans for Sydney included you. You were part of that.
Yeah, well, see, the metropolitan area finished at Crossroads. That was their idea. Funny though, the Japanese never worried me much. I mean, I don't know, probably didn't realise what it was going to be or what the Japanese were going to be. I mean, it didn't. We did have a hole in the ground which was supposed to be our air raid shelter.
And where was that?
Next door.
Near the other house.
Yes, yeah. And I think it was when the submarines came into Sydney, they sounded the alarm and we went and sat in the hole, but nothing, don't laugh, nothing happened.
I'm only laughing because I've interviewed other people who told me that too, and so I thought, I'm just laughing because everybody has the same memory. Nothing happened.
We filled that, all our rubbish, we filled the hole up with rubbish after that, got rid of it. And I went and did a first aid course.
Where did you go to do
just
that?
Just up in the hall. But even if I'd have learnt, I couldn't have done anything if I'd have known there was a first aid. I couldn't have done anything. I might have stopped bleeding, but that'd be about the only thing I could have done.
So there was a community hall just at Crossroads?
No.
That was just here?
On the corner of the... It's just the other side of the expressway.
Oh, okay.
It's still there. The hall's there. They go and vote there.
Mm.
Well, they used to. And that was there.
So who managed that hall? Was that the council? Or was it just a little Progress Association?
Progress Association, I think.
Mm.
But I never... My dad wouldn't let me go to the dances. I might meet somebody undesirable. I don't know who they were, but anyway.
So did you get up to tricks when you went into town with your friends from cable makers?
No. I tell you though, we did go down, three of us, when the Queen came out in 1954, wasn't it? Oh, that was wonderful.
Tell me about those few days.
We only went the one day. Though after the war, we used to go down to Anzac Day to see if we could see any of the fellas that went to the war and were now soldiers and marching. So we used to go down there. But when the Queen came and all the streets were decorated and I've got all the photos there, but they're only little black and white ones.
And how did you get down to the city that...
Oh, well, there's a bus running then.
Okay.
And then
bus to the city or to the train
station? No, to Liverpool.
Yes.
Then we used to get the train down. And we were in Hyde Park when she went through, so we all waved as she drove around. But that was really a wonderful time. It was,
and the city I remember that myself.
Do you?
And the city did look sparkling.
Oh, everything was... There was... All the shops were done up and... Oh.
So you didn't think anything really of going into the city for the day? It wasn't...
I used to go... Mum used to look after the golf course and I'd go on Saturday with Vera and Mary.
Mm.
We I used to get a bus at 7:20 from here and you'd get into Liverpool, into Sydney about 9:00 and then... We used to go to the theatre and, well, it would still be a thrill now, I suppose. We used to go to...
To see a live show?
Yeah. Mm. We used to go to Her Majesty's and... What was the other one?
The Royal?
The Royal, yeah. We used to
go... You didn't go to the Tivoli?
I only ever went to the Tivoli once and that was when... No, I went twice. We went when they played... Taming of the Shrew, and it was, can't think of her name at the moment, Hepburn. Hepburn.
Catherine Hepburn.
Catherine Hepburn. She was a Jamie and the Shrew. And I went down with two of the girls. I think there was about four of us went down and saw that. And I went to the Tivoli once when my auntie mate took us, and they had the nudes down there. Oh, they weren't allowed to move. They stood each side of the stage. It was a variety show, I think. And they were nude. Oh, gee. But they got a stay put.
And there was, what about local theatre or going
to
the
there
pit?
Used to be a bus long after Georgie had gone. The bus used to go down to the pictures on Wednesday night and Saturday night.
Into Liverpool.
So I used to go with the two girls from next, one over there and one over there. And we used to go down to the pictures on those two nights. Mm. That was it.
Did you get a television fairly soon or did...
Yes, actually we did. We had it fairly...
I think...
Fairly early.
I think the Melbourne Olympics we got television, I think, which is 19... I think this is right. In the middle of the 56 maybe, that television came to Australia.
I think it had... We got it, I think. We're living in the other house over there then. And I think we got it just after. That was a real thing for us then. Actually, my dad wasn't too well then because he had enlarged prostate. And he used to worry about himself all the time, just as Willie did, I suppose. And I know we got it then and he used to watch it. He'd even watch religious programs. He'd watch anything because it was so novel. Mm. Yeah, when we had the car, Mum and Dad and myself, we used to go into Sydney every now and again. He used to drive in and we'd go down, do a bit of shopping and go to the pictures. Mm. So we saw all the old, the real old, nice pictures they were, not the sort they have now. Mm.
And where did you go? The pictures were in George Street now.
We used to go to the State, the
yes.
Regent.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And there was St Mayfair.
So that would be a long drive.
It was a long drive, but there weren't much, there was practically no traffic about. Mm. And Dad used to park in Wattle Street, and then we'd walk from there, because the Regent was round the corner.
That's right.
And,
down near Central.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And I think the state was up in...
Oh, the State Theatre is in Market Street.
Market
near
Street.
Near David Jones.
Yeah, and the Mayfair.
I don't know the Mayfair. Is that Elizabeth Street, maybe?
No, there was another. I don't think so. There was another one, Elizabeth Street. I think there were four picture theatres.
Oh, okay.
I know we used to go to those three. I can't think if there was another one. But we used to go there.
And so then you retired in 1966.
Is that what it was?
Yes, and your father died in 67, we've worked out. So you've had a lot of time living here with your mother for part of that time. What are the things that were keeping you busy after that?
Well, I used to do the garden and tried to get a bit of a part-time job, but it was a no-go. Actually, just after, that was when Mum died. I had to look after Mum till she died, and she died in 19... She was 1973, because I went on the woman's trip world fair 1975.
Did you go with a friend?
Went by myself. I hadn't got any friends then, I've got friends galore now, I've got them laid on, but in those days I didn't.
Because you'd been isolated and focused on nursing your parents, whoops. We're just listening to Brakes screaming. I might turn this off while we just stop for a minute. We're talking about the Women's Weekly Discovery Tour, an adventure that you set off on.
That was wonderful. 4.5 months. We went everywhere. But anyway, I had to look up. I was looking after Mum. I was looking after my mum for quite a while because she was great. She could sit on the veranda. 90-odd, She could look across the road there and tell me that the lady over the road had put a washing out. She had wonderful eyes. She didn't get what I got. But then I used to say to her, never get out of bed unless I'm there to help you out. So what does she do? Gets out of bed, falls down. She didn't break her hips. We got her into the hospital or something. She was okay, but she got pneumonia. And I nursed her for about 12 months. But it wasn't until she died that I was able to go out with a woman's weekly.
Mm.
And then after that, I joined Liverpool Hospital as a pink lady. I was there for about 15 years, I think. I also did Meals on Wheels for another 15 years. I used to go up to the canteen at Casula High School and help with the meals. And we also had, a group of us had a little stall. We used to make things and get secondhand stuff, go to Coverty markets, and we had a white elephant stall. And we raised money for Liverpool Hospital. We paid for one little ward there, which was $3,000, I think. Dollars. And bit towards the stained glass window that was in the chapel, which I don't know what's happened to that since. So, and I was doing Meals on Wheels until a few years, till I gave up driving, more or less.
Oh, so I was going to ask you, you must have had a licence. You got a driver's licence.
I had a licence from, trying to think when I gave it up. I think I was 89 when I gave it up, when they did this road.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, no. And I used to go out every Friday, I did the Meals on Wheels. And one morning I thought to myself, I'm not doing that anymore. I've had enough. And I just rang up and said, this will be the last time. And that was, I used to go around Warwick Farm. Then I used to go around Casula. And towards the end, I was going all the way up here to Austral, Rossmore, Kemp's Creek.
Mm.
I used to do up there because I was out this way and the others weren't.
Mm.
And I didn't have to go back into Liverpool and take the... And I had a friend who used to go with me, and we used to go around. I did it by myself for a long while because she decided she wanted to come. And we used to go and deliver about 7 or 8 meals. I used to do 52 kilometres altogether. That was the area that it used to cover. Mm.
So you had your own car?
Yeah, I had a Tirana.
Mm.
I got one when you had automatic.
Mm.
I wasn't any good with a manual, and when the automatic came out, I paid $3,000 for it. It was the manager's. It was a demonstrator car. It was a lovely car, really.
And so who taught you to drive? Did your father?
My dad, no. I went and had a couple of lessons, but I don't think she really taught me very well, because I really wasn't. I was a safe... I never had an accident. I was a safe driver, but I wasn't an adventurous driver. I never learned to rear to park. I don't think many people can really rear park, can they?
Well, it is a bit tricky. It's tricky.
None of the time when I... They didn't even teach you when I went.
So when was that? When did you get your car? In the... So you finished work in 67.
Yeah, was but I didn't get the car till after I'd lost Mum.
Oh, so that was 70... No. That's in the 70s.
Yeah, it was a 1973 car. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
And I got it 1975, I think.
So in the 1970s, what were the roads like round here? Were they relatively quiet?
When we came here, there was a little boy across the road who used to have a tricycle. He would ride his tricycle up and down the middle of the road. And there was no chance of him ever getting hit because there was never a car there to hit him. That road was... There's just nobody on it.
Mm.
Just a stray car here and there, but when you look at it now, gee, I often wonder what my mum and dad would think if they could see all the lights down here and the expressway, and oh, gee.
And all of the development, because really your experience has seen the land go from a virgin Cumberland plain to farmland,
yeah,
and now to housing and industry.
But this side of the road hasn't changed, Edmondson Park, because they can't get the land to, can't get anybody to buy the ground. But what I was also going to tell you, that Dawn that I've given you her name, her mother was housekeeper for Charlie Throsby, who owned the ground just a couple of blocks up. He had 600 acres. He was the grandson of a Throsby, who was an explorer, and he was given the ground as a kitchen garden, 600 acres. And this was a crown grant to a fellow named Charles Parker in 1817, originally.
So the Parkers...
And there was a piece in between, but I don't know what piece in between
Between
was.
The Parkers and the Throsbys.
Yes, the Throsbys.
And the Parkers had sold on to another of people. You didn't buy from the Parkers.
No, we bought some people called Noble, who had a cement work somewhere over Sutherland. And they owned it.
And they didn't live here? Did they live here?
Yes, but their daughter, I think it was, her name was Mrs. Kitcher. She lived just up the back there.
And she stayed there for a little while after
they were there for quite a while after we bought it. We didn't buy their block. Mm. We bought it this side of their block. Because there's a lot more ground that was in this block that was at that side across the back. It was a fairly big area. Must have been, we had 100. There must have been about 200 acres altogether. And there was a really old house there that should have been preserved, but it wasn't. And there was a house on here before we had it, because just over there in front of the golf course, there was a patch there that had, when we came, there were convict bricks and bits of harness and all sorts of stuff that was in the ground. I want Michael to go and take his...
Do a bit of archaeology.
Yes. And also out the front there, when we came, there was a milestone. When they did the road, they took the milestones out. It had the convict arrow on it, the sandstone, and it had S24 on one side and L4 on the other. That was 24 miles to Sydney and 4 miles to Liverpool.
Yeah, I would have thought
nobody
it was more
valued
than
24
it. Miles to Sydney.
It was then. It was 24 to Sydney. I don't know where Sydney started.
That's right. It wasn't to
You're
the
not
GPO.
Supposed to laugh at that. I have a feeling it used to be where the GPO was.
Really?
I had a feeling that was classed as the centre of Sydney.
I would have thought it was more than 24.
And
miles.
It was 24. No, it was miles. We're not
yeah,
talking
so you're
about
talking
miles.
Double.
So it was a mile to cross.
Yeah.
It was 1 mile to Crossroads.
Yes.
4 miles to Liverpool. And so we had it never valued, the stone, you know. And it was sitting there. And somebody came along and the car broke down. And they jacked it up on our milestone and broke the milestone in halves. And I don't know what happened to it. But, I mean, we should have looked after it. You didn't look after anything. It just...
And you didn't use the old convict bricks for anything? The bricks that were over there you didn't utilise, that you're aware of?
Never even brought one over. Should have saved that, you know. They were the old convict bricks. I'm sure I haven't got any of them. You didn't value anything. You didn't. It wasn't anything, you know. History, I suppose the same thing is going on now. History's everywhere and we're knocking it down or building on it.
Well, they did just, I think Throsby Park, which is in Bowral, I think, so from the Throsbys who used to live here, that's just been given to the National Trust or one of the museums. We're beginning to recognise that history of exploration and settlement is worthwhile preserving. Yeah.
The old house, when we came, there used to be an old shearing shed and the house up there. Whether it's still there or whether it's been knocked down, I don't know.
Mm.
But that Dawn, her mother used to housekeep for Charlie Throsby.
Over here?
Yes, when he was up here.
Okay.
So she would know, Dawn and the rest of the other girls, they would know things about that I didn't know.
And she was a neighbour here.
She lived right opposite.
Okay.
Exactly opposite the golf course.
Yeah.
That's where the little old house was that used to be the post office, which the council made them knock down. It should have been preserved too, because this was a Cobb and Co road. The Cobb and Co coaches used to go along this road up to Camden, probably to Camden, because the MacArthurs and all
that's
those
right.
were up there.
That's so. A very, you know, important centre. Camden was an important
farming
centre. So
it would go from Sydney probably up here and probably round, which is now Leppington, round, which is now still the Camden Valley Way, round up to Narellan and all up there.
Yes, all those dairy farms that were very important.
Round here was all the either market gardens. Across the road there was a peach orchard, and in the middle of what is now the road there was a vineyard and another peach orchard.
When you came here?
Yes, when we came here. They were both here before we were. And we were pretty early on.
And how long did they last? The peaches, apparently Sydney was a great place for peaches, and they came with the first fleet, and then they were everywhere. People were...
They were Italians across the road.
Okay.
And they were Swiss who had the other...
The market garden.
They had the grapes. They had
the
vineyard. They had a vineyard and round in what is now, what was then Beach Road, there were a lot of Estonians, and they came out after the Russian Revolution. Mm. In fact, one of the fellas we used to sell our charcoal to, he was a Russian who came out. They all had money, and that's why they'd... I mean, it's a fair bit after the revolution, but it would have been the 1930s too.
1930s, yeah.
It would have been, but they'd probably been. But then they bought up ground down in Beach Road. They were mostly Estonians.
And did you have anything to do with the camp behind you? Was it...
No, not really, except that they used to come and train on the place next door. They were everywhere. There were soldiers everywhere.
Mm.
But we didn't really see many of them.
Mm.
They used to run up and down the road here with their tanks and whatever.
Mm. And it was fenced, I think. Was there a wire fence?
I think they did. They put the fence through, I think.
Mm.
But it wasn't much of a fence. I know we got an order that we had to get rid of the prickly pears. The army too. So they got rid of their prickly pears and threw them over our fence, didn't they?
So did you have a discussion with them once that
happened?
Oh. Is there anything that I should have asked you that I haven't asked you? Let me just see.
I don't know. I keep thinking about little bits and pieces. And
Well, I thought it was interesting when you said that your father wanted to have a dairy farm,
but
he didn't have a milk license.
No.
Why do you think he wasn't given a milk license? Do you know?
That would never have occurred to my dad. He never wondered what we were going to do with the milk when we'd got it. He just sailed into things. He dived into them.
Mm.
Like he dived into building houses. He wasn't a builder.
Mm.
But somebody showed him. But he built good houses, I'll say that. They reckon that if he did a house, it was a good house.
Mm.
But he did everything. Had an estate. News agents at Strathfield used to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go down to Strathfield Station to pick up the newspapers. Then he'd come home in a horse and cart and go around and deliver the papers. No wonder he gave that up.
Mm.
Gee.
And it's interesting because he had a bad back from the metal work.
Yeah, but I don't...
But working here on the land is not something you do.
Apparently he used to do something called spinning. Now, I don't know much about this, but I think to do it you had to put a...
brace.
A belt round your back to hold the thing. While you did the spinning.
With the metal work?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
See, if you look there, see that thing?
Yes.
He made that.
This is a big copper urn. Very
yes.
beautiful.
That's the sort of thing he used to do. Mm. He did that on the wall. See, when he got these things and when he cut and he'd finished, he sort of lost interest in
and
them.
And then he didn't do it. You came here and that was gone and you moved on to something else.
I didn't like that. I used them. Mm. Anything. I'll show you the other one. That was the back of our old car, by the way. He used the back of our Kleiner.
He recycled it. He was the first of the recyclers. And he didn't, was he someone who was involved in the local community?
No,
were your parents?
No.
Your parents weren't involved in?
No.
No. But you have been.
Once they'd gone, I ended up in everything because I never had a chance before. Mm. I took the painting after. I'd always wanted to do painting, even when I was school, but never got a chance to do it. Mm. And then... what happened? Another friend and I used to go, after Mum had gone, we used to go down to the Tech at Liverpool, and I did a dressmaking course, and then there was a painting course, and I remember Maria said, let's go to the painting course. So I went to the painting course, we used to go, and the teacher, he was a dead loss, it was a Tech one, he'd come round and he never told us how to do anything. He'd put something there and say, now paint it. Then he'd come down and stand behind you and look at it and say, mm-mm. Go to the next one and say, mm-mm. Then he'd disappear with his girlfriend. So I never really learnt any painting from him.
Mm, you just had the talent. You had the talent.
Wait on. Then somebody said to me, there's another painting. Her name is Anisha Smealy. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. She was quite a good painter. She started a course in School of Arts at Liverpool. And I thought, I'll go down there. So I went down there and she was great. She started us off on little jam tins and things to get angles and all that sort of thing. And then we did it in black and white. And then we went into colours. And I don't know why I slept there. And then another lady came, Ingeborg something or other. She came and started in a community hall at Churchill Gardens. And then I went there. And that's when I really, really learned. And most of it, I did most of it off my own. I've got them in every room.
Mm.
I did me doggy. You didn't see the doggy.
Oh, that's beautiful. And this, I like this one here too. I've got my camera, so I'll take photos of your... photos of your art and photos of your
father's and those over
art.
There, those over there. See that? They're in every room.
Yes.
But I more or less taught myself. Once I got the hang of it,
Just having the opportunity to do it.
And then I went there till...
And do you go to the art gallery and look when you were younger and went into town?
Yes.
You went to the theatre, did you go to the galleries as
well?
Yes,
we did. We did. I loved Norman Lindsay. I really loved him. Used to go and look at the really big paintings down there. But I can't stand this surrealist stuff or whatever they call it.
To have a landscape or something that's figurative,
yes,
something you can see.
I like landscapes.
Mm. Mm.
But my mum never knew I did the painting because I couldn't go until after she'd gone.
Mm.
And it wasn't until after she died that I was able to do everything I wanted to do.
Mm.
That's when I got the car and was able to do the Meals on Wheels and go to the hospital.
And get all of the new friends.
Oh, yeah. And since then... I've collected them. I tell you, I've really collected them. Because I've got a group that goes... Oh, are you going? Oh, you're not going.
No, I'm not today.
You're not going.
Not today, no.
I've got a group that goes with the Outer Liverpool Community Services. then I had depression about, the real depression, about, first I did my knee.
Mm.
I tore the ligament in my knee. I stood on an empty milk crate and it tipped over.
Mm.
And I was, one leg was going over here. I did that. Then I was told I had macular degeneration. And I said to the chappie at the, Dr. Sark, he was, I said, will I go blind? Didn't know much about it. He said, oh, you'll always be able to navigate. To me, navigate was going around with a little white stick. And between the two things that happened together,
mm.
I got depression.
Mm.
And I was in Braeside for 4 weeks. And I may, we still go out with that group. I met another lot of friends there. And then the Meals on Wheels people, I've got friends everywhere now.
Well,
they laid on.
And being busy is part of it, isn't it?
But before that, I knew practically nobody except the few that were at work.
Yes.
And you didn't get much chance to, except a few of them, you know, you didn't get much chance to...
To talk.
Communicate mm. too much with them.
And you saw them, on, but you saw those three, those friends on Saturday after, from work.
Yes.
That was a regular
thing. That was Mary
thing.
And Vera.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you still see them? Are they still around?
No, Vera. Vera. I don't know what happened to Mary. They both got pregnant.
Oh, okay.
They had to leave.
Yeah, family.
And Vera died of a heart attack after mowing the lawn a few years back. And I don't know what happened to Mary. I often wonder what happened to Mary, but I don't know.
So that's an interesting point, that they had to, because at that time women couldn't work after they were married. No.
You didn't. If you had a baby, pack the Swiss people over there. The daughter there got pregnant, and of course they gave the babies away.
Mm.
The poor little kids, and the mothers didn't. But Mary, I remember Mary didn't care. She was going to have one, and she was proud of it. But Vera had to get married. Oh dear, that was a terrible thing to happen to have. Oh, the baby. Oh my gosh.
Mm.
Oh,
gee. How times have changed. Mm. Now, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you thought you wanted to say?
Yes, I saw them. You know the big tower over there? I saw them building that.
Tell me about that.
That's all I can tell you is to watch them building it.
When
the fella
was it?
Would go up. I don't know. It was before the war.
Mm.
The fella would go up on it, be pulled up, and that screw a little bit in, and then that screw another little bit in. I watched them build that tower.
Because you were still here then. You weren't working.
Were you? No, we were growing tomatoes then.
Yes.
That was in the tomato department.
Mm, mm. So the tomatoes are an interesting thing because
everybody grew tomatoes.
And Sydney's climate's not terrific for, you know.
But they tasted like tomatoes.
Yes.
Then. They don't now.
Mm.
They were beautiful, those tomatoes.
Mm.
All the kids, everybody, either worked on a chook farm or they grew tomatoes.
Mm.
All my friends, they're not my age. Most of them are maybe 20 years younger. But they still... And most of those I know out that way are migrants, I don't know what to call them, new Australians. Mm. They're mixed.
Mm.
In fact, I go out with the group up there and I think there'll be about 15 of us. I'm the only one with an English name.
You've seen a lot of changes in that area.
Well, we had a German used to live up the road there, Italians over here, Swiss over there, Estonians down there, and one from Albania. So there were a mixed batch around here. And then after the war, because we had all the displaced people, mm. and there was Germans and everything, because the Germans could come out if they were married to an ally. So a lot married to Yugoslavs, and they would come out, and some were married to French and different things.
Mm.
And they were very nice girls, mm. and most of them were quite literate in English because they'd already learnt it.
Mm.
So... It used to be funny, but you'd get to an Italian talking to a German and talking to a Russian, all in English. And you've got some very funny expressions.
And when you left school at 14, were you happy to leave school, or did you want to continue on, or was it just not discussed?
Well, actually, I passed to go it was called the QC, the qualifying certificate, and I passed to go to Parramatta School. But Dad wouldn't let me go because I'd got to go on that naughty big train. Something might happen to me on the train. And once we came up here, I couldn't have gone anyway because there was no way, because it was only Preston School, and of course that was only primary.
Yes.
I couldn't have gone to a school anyway. I would have liked to have gone on because I was good at school. I really was. And I would have liked to have gone on, but...
And your mother didn't... She went along with it?
My mum just went along with whatever Dad said. She never worried about anything. So she wouldn't have bothered. Which was never brought up, actually. It was just taken for granted that, you know, you left at 14 and that was it. And then you either went as a school teacher or a nurse or you did somebody's housework and that was it. I used to do a bit of knitting for people. I used to knit then 10 cents a skein. I used to do a bit of knitting.
Did you knit on the way to work when you went to cable makers? What, did you sit on the bus and the train?
No, I used to go to sleep. But I used to knit going down the train because I used to do Fair Isle, you know, the reel that you knit behind the back. And I remember doing that going down in the train and I'd have people look, wonder how she does that, wonder how she does that.
That's a skill, a lost skill.
I used to do some really nice Fair Isle. I could knit it into the back, not just spread it across, weave it in at the back and...
So were you knitting socks for the soldiers?
Oh, yes, I even knit, because across the road here we had a fellow went to the war and I knitted him a pair of socks. Mum could turn heels and all that. And when Dad's socks, she used to knit Dad's socks. And when the foot wore out, she used to just undo them and pick up the stitches and knit another foot into them. Oh, my mum was very clever. She could do dressmaking and that sort of thing, but... Ask her about politics, she wouldn't have known a darn thing.
But you're interested in politics?
No, no. I think they're a lot of crooks. I really do.
So it's not what you watch on television, is not that, no.
Look, I think there are a lot of crooks and they keep covering and anything goes wrong, nobody can ever find anything wrong.
Does that go for all the local council as well as
the
state?
Local council's worse. Don't mention our local council. We've got a Muslim now who is the chief, whatever it is. Oh, gee. We did have some good ones. There was Col Harrington, Doble Brown, and Jeffrey something. We had three really good councillors, and the others gradually boosted them out. We've got a lot of crooks there. They are crooks. You get them.
Okay, I think we might end now.
You didn't see this.
Now we're looking at...
Put it on your paper.
Okay, I know what it is. It's
electronic magnifier.
So this is for reading. Fantastic.
Yeah, but you can't... And as you get differences... I can't read a book or anything with it, but because it's too small. But
I'm just going to turn the tape off. It's 12:30. We've been talking for a long time. I'm just turning the tape on again because Wynne's got a story about the land which is beside where the expressway is now. But it was formerly land that was owned by various people. Now, tell us about that story.
Well, round about when we came here in 1931, just before then, there was, in that little old house there, was a Mrs. Bailey. And we were told that her husband had been killed driving round down from the crossroads on his bike. She sold out to some people called Oatley, and just a day, couple of days before the war started, Mr. Oatley was clearing the paddock ground, and he had a tree well puller, which has a big heavy cable on. The cable flew out and hit him in the chest. He got pneumonia and died two or three days later. Then they sold out, and some people called Jackson bought it, which was during the war. Mr. Jackson and a friend of mine, Beryl Forbes, were driving out through his entrance. He drove in front of a taxi which was driving down from Crossroads, and he was killed. Beryl was in hospital for quite a long time. Then after that, there were some people called Brisant. The old chap who used to drive a horse and cart, sitting on a really old horse, what would you call it, a dray. He was sitting on the shaft like the old chappies did in those days. Got to near the Casula, something frightened the horse, and he fell off and he was killed. And then the next people there was an old young couple there, and she died of pneumonia just a few months after they went there. And I just thought that was more than coincidence.
So the stretch of land there was cursed, you could say.
Well, I reckon. Well, don't you think with four men die one after the other, nobody in between, and then the young woman dies. And then I don't know what happened to it. It wasn't bought anymore. It was only rented.
And then it became part of the road.
And then it became part of the expressway.
Well, that's a...
But, I mean, you don't often get four people one after the other. The man has been killed in each one. And killed, not just died, killed.
Mm. It's like you hear about homes with ghosts that people see one after the other, and you hear about rooms that have had a horrible thing happen in them. But this is, you know...
But that was...
It's a very strong pattern, isn't it?
To me, it always seemed just a bit odd.
Mm.
Four people, one after the other.
And the other thing that I was asking you about was whether there was any traces of Aboriginal culture when you moved here. And tell us about that.
Oh, that was when they were putting the power line down and they churned all the ground up and they made a horrible mess. And I found an Aboriginal axe head. You could see it had been used as an axe. It grooves where they'd had it tied. And I gave it to somebody to put in the museum at Liverpool there, but it disappeared. It never came out the other end.
So they were putting... Did you have the power when you first moved here in the
1930s? That was the big power lines I'm talking about.
Yes.
No, when we came, all we had was city water. I think they'd only just put that in.
Mm.
Now, we had a Miller lamp, ours was called, same as everybody had a kerosene lamp. We didn't have a stove. We had a kerosene stove. We didn't have a fuel stove. We had the kerosene stove, and Mum used to do the washing outside with a copper and put bits of wood underneath that. And then she used to have... I don't know how she did it, you know. Double sheets.
Mm.
You'd have to get them out, put them in the rinse water, wring them, put them in the blue water, wring them again.
Put them on the line with
a
clothesline with a prop in the middle.
Yes. And it wasn't until I went to work and had got money that I bought her a wringer so she could wring them through. And then washing machines came out, so I bought her a washing machine.
And do you remember when you got the phone on?
That was pretty early on. It was still... that was before I went to work.
Mm.
Because Mum used to ring me up at lunchtime to tell me what she wanted bought at night buys or whatever. And I just knew she was okay. She used to ring every day. And we had it on when it was still the manual from Hoxton Park.
You used to ring the exchange.
You used to ring the exchange. And if they forgot to disconnect you, if you couldn't ring two people, because the first one was not still there, but the phone was still engaged. And now we were Hoxton Park 188.
Fantastic memory. On that note, Hoxton Park 188, I think we'll end the interview.
Well, the old car was 176789.
Say it again.
118769.
Okay. Thank you, Wynne. That's fantastic.